Okay, today we can do part two of our, so that not special materials. Just to remind you, last time we spoke about two groups of items. One is about behemoth tamea, which is about meat and poultry, and included in that, which we're going to come back to today, was fatty acids and glycerin. That was included last time. We're going to come back to it. Last time we talked about it, if it's really chafed, today we're going to talk about a different angle of it. That also included about fish and bugs. And the second half of what we spoke about last time was about dairy products, which was about halvisol and greenisisol and soft cheese and whey and all kinds of things that have to do with those kinds of stuff. Okay? Today, we talk about different other things that could be chafed. And again, the goal here, what we're trying to do here is just give an overview of all these things, like really just touch on these different things, because if we, in essence, there are less trafe things than kosher things, or class of trafe things. So if we identify all the trafe things, or one can make something trafe, then that sort of leaves everything else behind as being kosher, so to speak, which is a way of looking at things. Anyhow, okay, so we're going to go through. Okay, so the first is, the first group we're going to talk about are things that have to do with agricultural products. Okay, last time was animal products and dairy products, and now we're talking about agricultural products. Okay, so the first is machal yakum. Okay, Chazal were concerned that we would interact with goyim and that could lead to intermarriage. So they made they made three different yisurim that go along with those, the three that go together, and they are things that goyim cook or bake, the fishlakum and pasakum, the two different yisurim, each with their own, you know, twists of how they work. And they also made an issur to wine that a guy touched, because sam yayin, if he was touched it or he bought it, that's it makes sam yayin. So bishlakum and pasakum are negeya in a house. If someone's cooking, it's a negeya in a factory. If you make food, if you produce food, it's not usually some negeya for a factory for ingredients. Usually ingredients don't come in with bishul or pasakum problems. That's not such a common thing. For consumers, of course, it does. I mean, for consumers, of course, hold on 1 second. I need to see now.
One second. Got shem and akum.
Is mutter?
They're
glazing over there. So you say what you want to, I get it. Hold on a second. I just on my computer here, I'm sorry. Okay, so shem and akum, nothing to do with me. Not my problem. They also ask a gigli and 100 other things that are not negetas. You know, we said last time, we're not going to talk about things like petach hamar that were not negetas. Anyhow, so for consumers, for factories, ingredients come into a factory of bishul and pasakum are not such an issue. But things to do with grape, there are loads of them. So we already spoke once about bishul akum, and we'll talk about it in the future, that bishul and pasakum at other times. But grape products, ingredients that come from grape will have questions of sam yayin are all over the place. Just this week in tartaric acid is in sugar, okay? You wouldn't know that that's a question of sam yayin. We hope it's mutter, but it's a question of sam yayin.
Tartaric acid and sugar?
See, look at that. Yes, there was in this place. They're using tartaric acid in their
sugar. Regular sugar.
No. It's as far as the balancing the pH of the of when it's finishing. They use tartaric acid in this place. Okay, so you should look.
Bottle, right?
Yes, bottle. And it's we hold this mutter, but yes, and there are people who don't hold this mutter. Yes, but so what I'm saying is it's all over this. We will one time do a thing just on grape products. There's all kinds of products that could come from grape all over the place that are so to speak ingredient type things. Okay. The next of the agricultural things is things to do with grains, okay? And so one thing, which either you think is very serious or you think is nothing at all, is that American hashgachas, or all the national hashgachas, just about, will give hashgacha to things that are, even if they contain what we call chadash, from the five grains, wheat, rye, spelt, oats, and barley, because most yidden in America are not makban on that. They'll eat even if food is yashan. So if someone wants to be makbid, most people eat even chadash, and if a person wants to be makbid, or if a hashgacha wants to certify something as being yashan, so then there's all kinds of complications, okay? All things that we have to do. One time, Mitch and we'll talk about that, what they have to do for doing that. Spelt and rye in the United States are always yashan. Just the way their planting season grows, they're planted before Pesach, and they're harvested after Pesach, so they're always yashan. But for the other ones, for wheat, barley, and which one time is oats. So then that, for a hashgacha, that's something to think about, or a private person to think about what they have to do. One time we'll talk about it.
And a lot of rye is imported from Canada.
I don't know if it's any worse from Canada. Is that true?
This is right.
Okay, could be. It could be. You might be right. Okay. Okay, now, the next thing to do with grains is that if a Jewish person owns one of those five grains, and he makes it into a dough, then there's mitzvah farshas challah. Okay, in order to be chayav in challah, so yes, I mentioned already, it has to be someone Jewish. It has to start with someone Jewish. It has to have a shir challah, which it's on. It's a shir challah. It has to be that the finished thing that you're going to make is going to have a bracha of mezonos or hamotzi, and it'll also have a tar lechem. Okay, so that means is to get all those things together. When we usually think about, you think of farshas challah for bread, but of course it means for cakes and pizza and cookies and all those kind of things. Also, assume you have a shir challah. But it means you don't have to be mafresh challah for pasta or for oatmeal. Or this week someone asked about they're making raw cookie dough to specifically put into, ice cream. And they're not selling it as raw cookie dough that someone's going to bake. Raw cookie dough that's just going to go into ice cream, whose bracha is not a mezonos or a moitzi. So you don't have to be mafresh challah, okay, because it doesn't have tar lechem, or it's not a moitzi, or if it doesn't have a shir challah. Okay. I think the bracha was, I forgot if it's...
So I was being down on that shayla.
Hey, wait,
what bracha is it? I forgot if it's shakum or something. I forgot what the bracha was. It doesn't... I don't remember. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so it's... I was being down on that shayla because I'm a Bas Yisrael. I want to be marked by Bas Yisrael. Something on Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Be marked by Bas Yisrael. And buy these ice creams that have cooking dough in it. So I was just thinking, is this a shayla over here? Possible here.
Mm-hmm.
I decided it's not.
Right. Good. Okay, we're on the same team then.
I was just thinking about that thing. Whatever. Tomorrow, I'm not sure. The OU, whatever. Just make sure.
Got it. Okay.
Are you definitely sure that it's...
No, that's what I thought. Terabis thought the same thing also. Hamasidim.
You find that
in Yes, well, that depends on what you want to be mocked on, you know? It depends on which side of the table you sit on that one, you know?
So you said that it's dough.
Right.
So it's not baked a little bit.
It's not chayav and chal. I have to think about the pastel part of it, but I think they go together usually. It's a din in Shin Chav Tes. I just looked it up this week.
So you decided based on it because it's dough.
It says that if you make a thing and you're not going to bake it, with kavanah to never bake it, then it's not chayav and chal.
What was the context? What's the reference?
Maybe it's a little baked.
Eight raw dough and all these?
I don't remember what it was for. I don't remember what was the case for over there.
Maybe it's a little baked, though. I'm just thinking that's what I'm thinking about.
You think maybe it's baked?
It's drop baked. Okay.
Yeah, get rid of the hysteria.
Okay, I don't know. Okay, So in talking about a shir challah, whatever you think you should, let's pick a number. We'll say the shir challah is 5 pounds, whatever the number is, pick a number. If in a factory, what I'm about to say is not something to get, but that's the Jewish ownership has to be that much. So if he owns the whole factory, so you need, yes, the dough is 5 pounds, he owns a bakery, it has to be 5 pounds. If he's a partner, let's say he's a 10% partner, and the shir is 5 pounds, then it has to be 50 pounds in the batch. Someone who's not Jewish, I'm sorry, someone partner with someone not Jewish, you have to have 50 pounds, because the yid shear has to be enough to be chayav and chalan. Okay, when you have the piece that's chal, once you take off the piece, you do the actual hafarshas chala, you have to burn the piece. Until then, it has the din of truma tmeya, and before your mafresh has the din of tevel, both of those, truma tmeya and tevel, both of them you have to kasher if it was put on equipment that was not done properly. If you use the truma or use the tevel, both of them, if you put them on kalim, you have to kasher those kalim.
The whole dough or the part was so fresh?
If you separate a challah, or if you were never mafresh and you have tevel, either one of those, you have to kasher because of that.
Strictly speaking, in the chutzlars, it might be like a chutzlar nisur, right? It's just a mitzvah on the...
So you can go listen to that share about that. No, you have to mafresh. I didn't say you can't. If you mafresh eventually, you're fine. You could be mafresh after. But like, for example, if you remember this 2 years later, then it's too late to do it.
Kasher the kalim?
You have to kasher the kalim, yes.
That's what you're talking?
Yes, I'll point you to the right page in the book if you want. Okay, I shouldn't say, that's how I remember it. Okay, we'll look it up afterwards. Okay, when I wrote this, that's what I thought. Okay, we will one day talk about how we do it commercially. Okay, commercially, that's not such a simple thing. That's its own special part of how we do that. Okay, and this reason, this idea that you have to be mafresh challah from if a yid owns this company, is one of the two reasons why we track which companies owned by yidden. One is for this, and one is for Pesach. Okay, we have to track if a Jewish-owned company, if they're making potato chips, we don't care. But if they're making something that would be chayav l'chal, then we would care for this reason and for Hilchos Pesach, that they shouldn't have a trouble with Pesach. Okay. You shouldn't forget. We're talking agricultural things. So bugs we talked about last time. That's very relevant to agricultural things. But okay. Okay, next. The next group of things are things that have to do with time and place. So one I just mentioned to you. I didn't say anything. Just from time and place. Let's do it at the top place. Yeah, I'm trying to think where I said that. Okay, anyway, it's coming. Okay, so the first like this. The first is a time and place has to do with Pesach. Okay, that for come Pesach, there's all kinds of extra rules of what makes food kosher. Okay, that you can't have chametz or kidneys. Okay, you can't eat it, and you can't own it, of course, and have hanah from it. So wheat and soy and corn and rice, all those things are very popular all over the place. They're used in food chemicals like ethanol, think about like that, vinegar, making fermentations, emulsifiers. So they're all over the place. They're so rampant in what we have that they give hashgacha for something for Pesach. Just about everything needs to be special hashgacha on everything, but just about everything. And because it's so complicated, the general rule is that we only give hashgacha for Pesach or hashgacha tmitis. Okay? Not everything. There are some exceptions to that. There are some things that are always kosher Pesach, like a company I went to this week that's kosher Pesach all year round, not under our certification, which was actually not kosher Pesach when I was there. But I'm not going to say. But I'll tell you yesterday.
It was all year round, but was not kosher Pesach.
Right. No, it was so simple that it was going to be kosher Pesach that they certified with that a Mashgiach Tmidi. Usually Pesach says kosher Pesach, always Mashgiach Tmidi. Here they let it without it, and in fact it was not. But anyhow, that was like a weird exception. But usually things of Pesach are Hashgiach Tmidi because of all these complications.
It wasn't a matzah company, right?
It was not a matzah company. No. Mitzvah next week under a matzah company. But if I get in. Okay. Another thing about Pesach is that not only do you not eat it, but if a yid owned it over Pesach, it's chomesh over Pesach. Okay? So for people who own a house in your house, you have to care about that, of course. If you own a store, you have to care about that. Or you have to get rid of your chomets or do mechira chomets before Pesach. So you shouldn't be over in Bali Roy. If you're over, not just for your personal iser, yes, of course. You don't want over the iser. But also, the food's going to be us afterwards. Okay, so two things have come up with that in recent years have to do with this shiloh. And one is the one that was like sort of more personal to the CRC is that we came across this whiskey manufacturer who's a Jewish person. He owned this huge whiskey company, and it's the whiskeys that he makes are made with chametz, and they're made with chametz and they're aged for many years. So automatically, he owned every one of them for over Pesach. Okay, with other things, if he made cookies, we wouldn't be so worried. It would just be a certain amount of time at the Pesach. Here it's whiskey, so it's a big. That was a more serious shaila. It wasn't so relevant to the vodka and gin because those are tend to be not made from chametz and they're not aged. But for the whiskeys, that was a whole to do, as you may well remember. That's one thing. The second thing is that most food manufacturing companies, the people who actually make the company, aside from this case, by and large, they're not Jewish owned. You don't have to worry about chametz on Pesach. And stores, people are sensitive. They know the store that they shop in. If it's owned by a yid, they have to make sure that they sell the chametz. Okay, but what's come to light is this idea that there are distributors who are Jewish, and they distribute a lot of chametz, a lot of everything. Okay, so now, it turns out like this. When the distributor, if the distributor is Jewish, so the question is, when I pick up a box of pretzels, a bag of pretzels after Pesach, am I getting something that the distributor owned on Pesach or not? Okay, so to try to explain to you, I see five variations for how that could happen. Okay, for what could happen, what the shine is, okay? We have to figure out who owns this chametz. The story we're talking about here is the manufacturer is not Jewish, and the store owner is not Jewish, and the only person who's Jewish is the distributor. Okay, that's the question we're dealing with. So I'm going to give you five cases of who owned the chametz when. Okay, so in this case, the chametz is the simplest case. The chametz is in the store already before Pesach. Before Pesach, the store already had it. So he had it before Pesach, and on Pesach, and after Pesach. But it's not owned by someone Jewish, okay? So the din is that it's fine, it's mutter, no problem. It was owned by someone who's not Jewish, no Pesach. What? That's the easiest case, okay? That's the first case, okay? Okay, we'll move along. And the next case is, it was owned by the distributor before Pesach, and he sold it to the store on Pesach, okay? So in this case, okay, he owned it before Pesach, and he sold, means is, the third day of Pesach, he sold it to the store. So in this case, even if the distributor did a mechiras chametz, by selling the chametz on Pesach, he was over on Bayu by doing that. He retook possession of it. He for sure was over on it. So in that case, it's going to be usher. Okay? When he distributed on Pesach, even had he done a mechiras chametz before Pesach, in the middle of Chol Hamoed, he went and sold it to a store, so and the store is not Jewish. Why are you making cases?
I don't know. That's true.
Because?
He sold it, so it's not his. So he sold something which is not his. He was
never there. Okay, so Ramosha and the famous Chuba who talks about the only he says it, but if he sells it on Pesach, then it's usher. Ramosha, now the case Ramosha is talking about, the Wallbaum's case, is it's a supermarket. So if he sold it on chametz, the person who bought it said didn't care about chametz and Pesach. That person didn't care. The person says, that's not a gain to us. But of course, he says, no, it would be usher. But that's because he was talking about a supermarket. So the person who buys cookies on Pesach doesn't care about chametz. So we don't care about that person. It's not relevant to shaila.
He sold something which was not his.
So Ramesh says, no, but the act of selling it is a stealing back from the guy. He's stealing it back from the guy. So he because he first of all, so he took repossession of it, and because he's chayav akrayas, permission, so he says, for sure, it's usher at that point. Okay, that's our second case. Okay? You can think, mull that one over. Now, the third case is, the distributor, I don't know what's going on in this case. I see something wrong here. But anyhow, okay. The distributor had it before Pesach, and he kept it on Pesach. Okay, he kept it on Pesach, and he just gave it, he sold it to the store after Pesach. Okay?
And it was sold over Pesach?
So the distributor...
He sold it to the guy over Pesach?
So now... Why?
He kept the Pesach.
No, so he sold it, he wants to have had a Mechiris Hamas. So now it's going to depend. Okay, this case is a depend case. Okay, the distributor sold it to the store after Pesach. Okay, so now, what this...
Going back to case B, there was a Mechiris Hamas or not?
Yes, there was, even if there was a Mechiris Hamas, since on Pesach he sold it, the Rambam says in that case it's usher, because this act of selling it makes it usher. Okay, case C is, he sold it to the store after Pesach. Okay, so the distributor had it from before Pesach and he kept it through Pesach. And then he sold it to the store after Pesach. So here, there's two parts to think about. One is, did he have Mechiras Chametz? Okay, if he had Mechiras Chametz, that would be one thing. So if he didn't have Mechiras Chametz, it would be, of course, no good. Second, if he had Mechiras Chametz, then there's the question is, does that help? He ran his business like usual, so Rav Moshe says it's okay. Other people were not so thrilled about that. So that's a question. In that case C, should it be mutter or should it be usher in that case? Okay.
No. Sorry, I didn't follow. What's the shaila?
The distributor is Jewish.
Okay.
He owned chametz on Pesach.
I thought you said he sold it.
He had mechiras chametz. So first of all, he had to have mechiras chametz. Not every distributor has mechiras chametz. Okay. The second thing is, not everyone agrees with what Ramosha said. That if a guy has mechiras chametz and then he runs his business like regular, does that invalidate the mechiras? Does it
show
that
he didn't sell?
Even though stuff he didn't sell, that's good.
If he had a proper mechiras chametz, then it's fine.
No, I wasn't being clear. He had Mechiras Chametz and his business ran like usual. He was buying and selling, everything was running like ever.
He sold the business, the company, to a guy.
Yeah.
Had a manager, so that's for sure fine.
It depends. Not everybody's even about that stuff, but it depends. So there's a lot of variables over here. That's why it's great. It's a lot of variables.
Correctly.
Then maybe that should be okay. Yes, okay. Yes, that's great. So it's a fuzzy case. It depends on a lot of variables over here and position. Okay, case number D. Okay, the manufacturer had the distributor didn't get it till Pesach. Okay, it was they got a delivery of Cheerios on Pesach. So General Mills owned it before Pesach, and on Pesach the distributor finally got it. So in that case, it's similar to case B, where it's even better than case B, where it's usher, because here it's not even covered by the mechira. Even if he had a mechira's chametz, because he got it on Pesach. It's not covered by the mechira. He can't sell it if he didn't own it.
Paper before Pesach.
So that's a fuzzy. That case is a fuzzier case. Rav Moshe would have said for sure it's not okay. Again, for the other cheshmen here.
It's clear that it's not going to work. I mean, the start is saying it's stuff that I'm getting.
So there are those who say that. It's hard to understand. How do you sell something that you didn't buy yet? It's a question. It's hard to understand how that could work. There are people who think like that. I thought this is more traditional. Again, Rav Moshe who says if you sell on Pesach, for sure would say in this case. The act is in itself taking
it. But how does it work? I'm getting somebody orders something, right, and it comes on Pesach.
Then what?
What?
Then what's your question?
Somehow I'm not hyper.
If a box of Cheerios shows up,
yeah,
you who said that? You don't feel like you want to be hyper, but that doesn't mean that's the truth.
So what do you do? What do I do? What do people do?
You don't order Cheerios to show up on Pesach. What can I tell you?
You're not kind
when it shows up at your door.
Okay, so the guy did mechira.
He doesn't care anything. He's running his business. He doesn't care about people. He's
sorry. What's good mechira?
Yes, of course.
What's the work?
If the distributor was a erlich, he closes the store for Pesach.
As much effort as he put into mechira, he wants the benefit of the mechira that the stuff shouldn't come also, right? So you mean
when it shows up and the guy comes out with a forklift and takes the pallets off his neck, he's like, "Oh, I'm not being kind to you, it's not mine.
I get a proper mechira that's owned by a guy. Now, I don't know. Maybe the reason why it's because bittul. Maybe it's a bittul you need to. Then I hear that this guy didn't do bittul. He just did mechira. And
last case is if the manufacturer had it from before Pesach and he had it on Pesach and he didn't sell it to the distributor till after Pesach. Excuse me. So then in this case, it's mutter. Because it wasn't by Yid until after Pesach. Okay, so. Okay, in my imagination, these are the cases I came up with. You can come up with more. Originally, I only had four. Then I came up with a fifth. There's maybe a sixth afterwards. I'm okay with that. But the so So I'm showing you this first, I'll just go through the cases. But also, it's really more than that. And really it is like this. That means that when I walk into the store and I know the distributor was Jewish, there's a very big Shiloh. What is the box that I'm holding? I'm holding this box of Cheerios now in my hand. Which was this case, A, B, C, D, or E? Which case was it, this box that I'm holding? I have no way of figuring out who owned it at which point. Okay, so that in itself adds a layer of suffix to this thing, which is a suffix to Rabbanon. Okay, so some Rabbanon says it's a suffix to Rabbanon. There's no way you could figure out whether the Cheerios are Mutter or Asa. Because look, there's some green boxes, and there are orange boxes in there, and there's gray boxes, there's everything in there. So the box that I have, I can't figure out which one it was.
Yeah, you don't know the distributor's Jewish either.
No, I'm saying, let's say we know the distributor's Jewish. So we find out that I live in this place. No, there are people who...
There's 10,000 products in this
building. Yeah, there are people who know. In this neighborhood, this city, this is who distributes. So I know, I got it. Or I know the beer distributor in New York before he got his Yerushalmi Kugel, before he got his whatever, his... Babka, for guys, Babka. Everybody knew that he distributed the beer, but who owned that beer over Pesach? So look at all these choices. There's all different theories, and you're going to come up with more of them. So that itself is a layer of suffix that maybe you say suffix won't go. There were those who thought like that. Others thought not like that. Okay, that's it. It's on. I'm not really sure. Okay. So now, okay, next.
Okay, so this is the one case, where we don't have a choice. Where this. All the products prominently displayed a nice hechsher on the thing.
And it might not be kosher.
There's nobody to control it. There's nobody to...
Yes, that's true. That's a good point.
I'm sure there's people out there that, chametz is a big thing about chametz and everything, so everybody knows. But, people say, what do you mean? I had a hechsher on that corner. I had a hechsher. Like, what's the...
Yes.
What are you talking about?
We had a five scenarios, they're awesome.
Two were okay, two were not okay, one was... Depends.
We don't derive it by a chart and bar. Not the scenario.
Okay. Next. Another thing has to do with we're in the time and place, if I were to pull you back into where we were. Okay? That there's a din of Arla. For the first 3 years that a fruit grows, only from a fruit tree, not from vegetables, for the first 3 years, the fruit is usher as Arla. It's only for fruits. And it applies to Chutz La'aretz. But special halacha Moshe Sinai that suffix arla b'chutz la'aretz is mutter. So for us, we come out never think about arla because as soon as even there's any fruit out in the market that are mutter, even any suffix that's enough to make it mutter. So it's come out like it has almost nothing to do with us, except if you own a tree in your backyard. Almost we never have a shayla of arla because it's always going to be a suffix arla. Is this apple arla or is it not arla? So no, it's partial. It's a suffix. Suffix arla b'chutz la'aretz is mutter. Okay.
We certified two stores here. How do we take care of arla?
So for Chutz La'aretz?
No,
I'm coming. I can get there to you. So I said, this is for Chutz La'aretz. For Chutz La'aretz stuff, we come out and not negate to us, okay? What negate to us is from Suffolk Eretz Yisrael. And so Suffolk Arla is like any other Isser, okay? Which is negate to citrus fruits is a common thing that they export. That's a fruit. That would be a Shiloh of Arla. So now there's a Shiloh. How much percentage of a fruit has to be Arla in order for it to be Usser in Eretz Yisrael? Okay? We spoke about this in Chutz La'aretz. Okay, if it's a suffix, at what percentage? Let's say if 14% of the oranges are arla in the market, is that mutter rasa? Am I allowed to eat them or not eat them? Okay,
you know for sure it's arla, of course.
And if you know if it's a suffix arla,
you know
you know that in the market 14% are, so that mutter rasa? Am I allowed to eat them? Okay, there's three big sheetas. Some say it has to be more than 50%. Some people say it has to be 10%, like me and Amatsu, that the number comes from. Some people say 5%, okay? We spoke about this in Hilchos Tehillim. What the all different sheet is about how much percentage it has to be.
It's 5% number?
5%? It's a good question. We spoke about it then. It's a good question. It's a good question. We spoke about it then. So what happens like this in Eretz Yisrael, there are groups who make charts of all the percentages of Arla for each fruit. Okay, they say this year, this season, the oranges are this, and the apples are this, and all the percentage broken down by all kinds of fruits, and then whatever sheet you like, you fit into your chart, okay? You fit into your chart. So when someone calls up the office and says...
And that percentage is what's on the market, or...
Yeah, in the market.
Grown.
But how much of the... Well, the same thing. How much...
Because they destroy them. Help you a lot, they just destroy them.
Oh, I guess they ignore those fruits, I'm guessing, but that's a good question. So, like, for example... Someone will call up and say, hi, I just bought persimmons from Eretz Yisrael. Can I eat them? Can I not eat them? We look at the chart and says, okay, this year persimmons are X percent, and is that good or is it not good? And we answer based on that, okay? And you said for our stores, the same thing. There are stores that we give Hashgacha to make sure that Trumas and Mice is taken from Eretz Yisrael stuff, the same thing for fruits. So if we bang into, oranges from Eretz Yisrael, we do the same thing. We say, look, these oranges, are they mutter or usher based on those percentages? Okay?
Such a chart that somebody's... Somebody does it? Somebody tracks this?
Yeah, the Eretz Yisrael, the groups that put these things together, the charts of all the fruits in Eretz Yisrael, I mean, I guess, whatever the fruits that they sell, and what percentage of each one is Arla, and then you pick your sheet, and you put it into the thing, and decide which ones you want to eat or not.
Where do you get this chart?
From, I have it, from, I get it every year or 2 years, I don't know, get it every year.
You might be eating Arla.
What did you say?
Ultimately, you might be eating Arla.
So what? And there was the milk that he drank might have been from a trefa also, but there's a din, when you're allowed to eat Minyali. I don't know if you had a coffee, was that a coffee or tea? How come? So it has milk in it also. So the milk might have been from a trefa, but there's a thing. Sometimes I eat something, and I'll eat it, okay? So it is what it is. You know?
So they work, you know, the entire non-certified plain fruit market, you know, what the percentages are, that it's all.
Correct.
Right. I would imagine within the first 3 years, not so many trees can fruit. I mean, they obviously take that into...
Right, because if they replant things. So yeah, you should. I'll just throw that in for that part, is that you should know, when they started paying attention to this, in Eretz Yisrael started paying attention to it, they then kept track. I forgot the number. The number might have been 900,000, but I might be wrong. Some crazy large number of fruit trees that were replanted under Hashkacha to make sure they didn't have to restart their early years. Because this sensitivity to make sure things don't become Arla, because of that, they hundreds of thousands, I've got the number, 700,000, 90,000 trees that were replanted up in to make it that they don't have to recount the years. Okay, fine.
Okay. I wonder why, I had these fruit trees, my parents asked me, trees that were replanted. Mm-hmm. I wonder how they know what the shear is. The shear is if enough to live. You have enough dirt to live, you don't have to recount. I don't know, how do they find that out there?
So I'll point you to my book. I just was writing something about it. I'll point you to it if you remind me afterwards. Okay. Okay. I'm going to point to you. Okay. Next. I have to. We have to finish. So we have a nice thing or so. Okay. Chumas and Marishas. Another thing has to do with time and place. What you asked about before. Okay. Sometimes grows in Eretz Yisrael needs to be mapped for Chumas and Marishas. Until then, the fruit, the stuff is tevel. If you're running on kalim, you have to cash those kalim. Okay, we actually had that. Okay, it's like whoever thinks about that here in America. One of the things that they export from Israel, it seems they're a big exporter of, is watermelon seeds. Okay, go figure. And we had a company that asked for hashgacha on their watermelon seeds coming from Israel. So going forward, they were going to get them already had hafresh trumas and meiser. They were going to get it, it was going to be fine, it wasn't going to be a problem. But the stuff they had used previously did not have that, had not had trumas meiser steak from it, and it was too late to be mafresh because it was gone. It had been years of it gone. It couldn't be mafresh anymore at that point. So we kashered kale, that's what we did actually. So in order to be mafresh, to do hafresha, you have to think of about 20%. The hafresha is on about 20%, which is you take a tiny bit for truma, then you take off, then you take 10% for meiser, then 10% of that 10% is trumas meiser. So far you took off 10% in a drop, and then you take off another 10%, either in some years for Meiser Sheni, that's years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of Shemitah's Meiser Sheni, and in years 3 and 6 of Shemitah, you take off Meiser Ani, another 10%. So in the end, you've taken off, give or take, 20% of the stuff has been separated. Okay, but all of that is mutter for people to eat, except for the Truma, which is the tiny bit you took at the beginning, and the 10% of 10%, which is another 1%, that's also those are Truma, which is, it's Tame, you can't eat it, and the Kayhanama Tame, you can't eat it. So that one, a little more than 1% ends up being not usable. So you have to discard it or get rid of it. Again, if you put that on your kale, you have to cash the kale for that also. And then the rest is okay. Okay, so this is negated to all kinds of things that come from Eretz Yisrael. Carrots, peppers, as you know, going on now, citrus fruits, and then there's things like lemon oil. Okay, lemon oil comes from Eretz Yisrael. That's also chayim chumas meiser. Okay. Last in this section is our favorite for this year, is because of Shemitah. Okay, that thing that grows during the Shemitah year, like this year, have special dinim to them. We don't, the American Hashgachas and the Maharjan Israeli ones don't accept the Hetta Mechira. So the two big issues that we have to deal with are, here in America are Svichin, which is vegetables, things that we planted every year, vegetables and herbs and things like that, they're Aser, if they're Shemitah produce, and Kedusha Shvias, which is things that grow during Shemitah, have Kedusha Shvias, you have to treat them properly. Okay, in Punkt, we have a mix of those actually going on right now, the peppers right now. They have Kedusha Shvias, and they're Shiloh Svichin. They're not Svichin, but they're a Shiloh. Okay, one day we'll talk about those also. Okay, so last thing we have to talk about is Kalim. Okay, so we talked about a bunch of different ways that things can be treif. And all things we talked about now, I tried to talk about were things that were inherently treif. Like, something was Shemitah, Svichin, so Svichin is Aser. The Svichin is Aser. And now, the last thing we have to talk about is Kalim. Okay? And that is, all the things that we talked about are, the thing itself is treif. But there's also a whole din of tam kikr that makes it that all kinds of things become treif because they were on the same kalim as those things that were treif. Okay? For example, you remember, I'm sure you remember from last time this chart, of fatty acids. Okay? I'm sure you memorized all those little numbers on there. And this is different oils and fats, and which fatty acids they have in them. Okay, if I can remind you, an oil or a fat is comprised of two parts, is glycerin, and glycerin is attached to three fatty acids. And the glycerin is exactly the same for all oils and fats, but depending on the fatty acids, the mix of fatty acids that are there, that dictates the properties of corn oil, why corn oil is different than lard, why it has different properties, a different boiling point, and all kinds of things. It has to do with the different mix of fatty acids that it has in them. Okay? The fatty acids are considered the more valuable part of these than the glycerin part. Okay? So in order to get a fatty acid, so let's take lauric acid. Okay? So you want to get lauric acid. So if you look on the chart, you see that a really good place to get lauric acid from is from coconut oil. Okay? Coconut oil is almost half of the fatty acids in coconut oil are lauric acid. Okay, it's 47%. It's a great place to get lauric acid from.
How else would you get it?
What?
How else
would you get it? Nothing else on this chart has it, right? So there are, it's in minor pieces on some other things, and they made another oil that I'm not thinking of, okay? But for us, that's a really common place to get it from is coconut oil, like you see yourself. You looked at the chart, you said, obviously you get it from coconut oil, okay? So lauric acid should be kosher, it comes from coconut oil. Okay, the problem is, so be'etzin, it's kosher, because coconuts are kosher. So coconut oil would be kosher, and the lauric acid should always be kosher. But in fact, we say it needs hashkacha, because to get the lauric acid out of the coconut oil, you have to do two big steps to get it out. Okay? The first is, it's called a splitter. You have to split the glycerin from the fatty acids. I told you, the oil is glycerin with fatty acids. How do you do that? You put it into this huge machine, I mean huge, like 100 feet tall. You put it in this machine that splits it at very high temp, like 800 degrees Fahrenheit, under tremendous amount of pressure, and it splits the glycerin from the fatty acids. Okay, that's the first thing you have to do, is you have to split the glycerin from the fatty acids. Then, once you've split them, now you have this mix of fatty acids, okay, you have this mix of fatty acids, and those fatty acids have to then be distilled. You have to put them through a still so that the lauric acid goes this way, and the caprylic acid goes this way, and the palmitic acid goes that way. You have to divide, you have this now soup of fatty acids, and you have to divide them so that you get only lauric acid as your thing. So there's a little difference in boiling point between lauric acid and palmitic acid. So by distilling it, you get just one, what's called fraction, out, and leave the other fraction go a different way. Okay? So you have this mix of fatty acids, and you divide them into the ones you want to. Now, those two processes I just described, the splitting and the distillation, both are hot, and both could also be used for animal fat. Okay, the same kalim that do that job, in fact, and they are. Coconut oil has a lot of properties and similar to other animal fats. So the same kalim would be used to split animal fat and then to distill the same thing. In animal fat, you're not trying to get lauric acid. You're trying to get, I don't know, stearic acid out. So you're trying to separate their soup of fatty acids and get out those fractions. So first you have to split it, for all of them, you have to split it, and then you have to distill them. So, mamela, you're going to use the same kalim. So that's why lauric acid is considered that it needs hashkacha, because not because we think it comes from animals. It's really unlikely it comes from animal products. But the reason is because of the kalim that it's made on. Okay? Like, for example, in laundry, grade, as I said, aside, things that are non-food use, lauric acid is no problem, because we know it doesn't come from animals. Okay? It's assumed that it doesn't come from animals. Okay, so now, so here's the rule, of the sort of the short version of the rule of how you break down fatty acids, okay? Fatty acids, we would break them down into these three groups. There's the short-chain fatty acids, okay? Okay, let's have the opposite end, on the right end. The long-chain fatty acids that are 14, 16, or 18, palmitic and stearic and myristic. What?
C
is how many carbons there are. The chain, it's a chain of 14 carbons or 12, the amount of carbons, okay, so the long chain ones could come from vegetable or animal fat. Those are the most serious. Okay, those could actually be inherently treif, the ones in the long chain fatty acids. The medium chained are like, you ever see like MCT oil, like medium chain triglycerides? That's what this is. Okay, the medium chains, okay, which is 6, 8, 10, or 12, caprol, caprylic, capric, or lauric. Excuse me, those are the medium chain. Those commonly come from coconut oil or some other vegetable oils. And those are assumed to come from a kosher source, but they need hashgacha because the kale that they're made on, that those processes I just described to you, are can be done with animal products as well. And then the short chain, the acetic and butyric, the C2s and C4s, those are not don't come from these things, but they're klal. They come from other processes that don't have such shilas them, and those are going to be okay, whoever they come from. Okay, they can come from animal products, but almost never. So those are okay no matter what. Okay. Okay. What do you say? Well, acetic acid, in this case, we're not talking about acetic acid like you. I'm talking about in a product, ethyl acetate. So the acetic version of that is assumed to come from this stuff. It's not the acetic acid like as in if someone's using just plain acetic acid. Okay, anyhow. Okay, now, another a variation of what I just told you. Okay, when you make corn oil, okay, corn oil, not corn oil for fatty acids. Corn oil, just corn oil, as it is, okay? So corn oil comes from corn, okay? So what could be wrong with corn oil? Okay, corn oil is corns. It's fine. What could be wrong with that? So inherently, it's kosher. The problem is that oils have an odor to them. It's actually a din shulchan aruch about that, that they have an odor to them, and before they send it to your house for you to cook with it, they deodorize it. They remove odor. They deodorize it. They take out the odor. Okay, the deodorizing is a type of still. Not the same one I described before, but it's a type of a still. What you're doing basically is you're boiling out those fragrances, the parts that you don't like, and you're distilling them out and leaving behind the oil that you do like. Okay, so the deodorizer that you use for corn oil can also be used to deodorize animal fat also. Okay, so the shaila of the reason why vegetable oils and vegetable and seed oils in hashkacha is because of the concern that maybe it was deodorized on kale and leaves. Seed oils, like I think actually corn may be a seed oil, okay, whatever, these kind of things, is because the chashash is that deodorizing might be happening on kale and that we use for non-kosher, okay? There's when I say these kind of oils, that's different than essential oil. Okay? Essential oils are, you steam to get the essential part of like a herb. Okay, like mint essential oil is you put mint through steam to get the flavorful part out of the mint into an oil rather than having to have the actual leaves. Okay, those are fine. Those don't need to go.
So you're saying the process is different. Corn is crushed, squeezed, as opposed to
corn. Well, steam. No, the process is not what I'm focusing on. When you make corn, however you get the oil out of it, sometimes it with a solvent, sometimes by crushing. That's not the sensitive part of it. Okay. The problem is, once I have the corn oil, I have a container of corn oil, and I have to deodorize it to make it taste better.
So but I don't do that. Don't need to deodorize.
Right, they're not deodorized. No, they are actually, the odor there is what you want. The fragrance of the mint oil is what you want.
So what defines, so what's the definition of an essential oil?
An essential oil is when you find something flavorful, like rosemary, and you don't want to use the actual rosemary, you want the flavor from that thing. You want the flavor from that, so it's an essential oil. You there's a process to get the flavor out of the rosemary so you can have rosemary oil. Okay?
So it's corn oil,
you want the oil, not the flavorful part of it, so to speak. So,
why is it given the name essential?
It's an ikker. This is the main part of the rosemary. Rosemary is not because it's so pretty, it's a nice little leaves. The main part is the oil that's in there. That's the flavor of it. As opposed to the leaf. You don't want the leaf.
The oil is what has the good.
It's what you want. And the oil in the corn also, but it's a seed oil. Like this is, I don't know, this is a seed oil. This is like a vegetable oil, and this is an herb. I don't know. Okay.
Not soybean oil. No one wants soybeans. They just want the oil.
Well, some people want soybeans, but it's a different thing. Okay, next. Another thing is, there are times that you have something, and you want to get the liquid out of it. You want to dry it out. In order to get the liquid out of it, okay? So those dryers, as you know, those dryers are things that could be used for kosher and treif also. So an example, just to bring out the case for right over here, is if you had dried hibiscus, okay, like vitamin C, dried hibiscus is made on a really simple dryer that is only used for herbs and vegetable things. So we don't have to worry about those kalim. But if you wanted hibiscus PE, hibiscus powdered extract, that is a liquefied version of hibiscus that was then dried, so there we have a chashash of kale. So anything that's dried, as you know, something that's spray dried, or drum dried, things like that, we worry about what else was dried on those kale, because they can be used for anything, okay? Okay, two more things. One is, if you have a food that needs to be heated, either to make it edible, or to make it not spoil. So then we usually are considered, I'm trying to finish up, I'm almost like two more things. Then we try to finish up, we need to heat it in order to either make it edible or to make it not spoil. And that, again, can be used for kosher and for treif. So if I make ketchup, and the ketchup has only kosher ingredients, so it's kosher. It's inherently kosher. There's nothing in it. Look at the ingredients. They're all kosher. But you have to cook ketchup in order to make it. So we're concerned that that kettle was used for something else that was not kosher. Okay? Or if you have canned corn, what's in this corn and salt and water? What there's nothing treif. Inherently, there's nothing treif about it. But it's processed on a retort that cooks it. So mamela, what else was put on it? Maybe the thing before it was pork and beans. Okay, so that mamela, it needs hashkach. Okay, and so that's only when we concern that the retort abuse of both. I'll throw in, I'm going to confuse you, that canned fruit is not like that. Okay, and bulk pasteurization meals, don't worry so much about that. Okay, too fast I said that. Okay, next. Last is, we are concerned that tam not only goes into a kli, but goes through the walls of a kli into the steam system. So when we give hashkacha, we think about not only was the kettle used to cook ketchup, and maybe beforehand it was used for something else, but maybe the next kettle over was used for something treif, and it affected the steam system. Okay, so here there's an interesting twist to that, which is that even though we care about that and we pay attention to that when we give hashkacha, when we think about things in group one, we don't pay attention to that. We ignore that. That's a good question. Why? But that's pretty accepted. The fact that maybe in that same plant they were doing something else in their steam system on the same kalem. Yeah. Okay. So that they're doing something on the same kalem that they do think about. Should we let this be group one within the same kalem? Should it be group one? The fact that maybe the steam system is being used something else. That's sort of people.
Of course, if we know we're certified, and say, well, it's
group one. I said, don't give hashgacha. No. Well, we say just ship it to the next company, the next place. Then it'll be okay. Okay, so just to wrap up what I was just trying to, my point here was that the inherent things that are inherently treif, there's a very limited scope of them. Okay, we try to map out all the ones we could think of, all the limited scope of things that are actually inherently treif. But this last group, which is things that are made on treif kalim, in my mind, affects many more things than the things that are inherently treif. We don't run into things that are actually treif, even though I listed, I don't know, 18 of them. I came up with 18 things that could be wrong with something. That can make a trade, that's harder to bang into. We don't bang into that so often. But to run into things that are trade because of kalim is a more serious trial. Now, in fact, on a commercial level, kalim is not such a serious concern. The evidence is usually not such a concern. But in practice, we are choishes. Think about that, something made on trade kalim. So I have a feeling that covers more items. There are more items that are affected, that are need hashkacha because of that, than things that are because they're inherently trade.